Hey, everybody. Today's guest is extraordinary. She was a federal judge who lost her son in a tragic drug overdose. The experience led her from being a federal judge to being a shaman. She is the author of Living Grieving, Using Energy Medicine to Alchemize Grief and Loss. I can't wait to share this interview with you today. Welcome to Next Level Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Tara Perry. For 25 years, I've helped professionals, first responders, celebrities, Olympians, teachers, moms, dads, and people just like you achieve their results better and faster than they thought possible. This is where measurable modern science meets the quantum. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive right in. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Next Level Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Tara Perry. I am super excited to have here with us Karen Johnson. She's the author of Living Grieving. Her fast-paced life as a federal judge came to an abrupt end when she lost her 27-year-old son to a heroin overdose. Pretty much the most devastating thing any of us could imagine. And rather than grieve the way most people would, she did the unexpected. She left her lifetime appointment of 30 years, sold her house with all of its belongings, and embarked on a 2.5-year journey that took her all over the world, ultimately discovering a healing and spiritual practice along the way. Wow, this is such a hero's journey. Karen, where do we start? I'd love to start with actually how you grew up, because your character arc in life is amazing. You kind of started out as lots of us do, where, you know, your parents lived a certain way and you kind of rebelled against that. And, take us on the journey.
Sure. Yeah. So I was an only child and my father was an only child. So very small family. And when I was growing up, we lived out in the country and pretty isolated. And so I had different friends there. I had a fairy friend that lived in a tree, and I had another seemed like American Indian person that lived in the basement. And so I kind of had imaginary friends everywhere. But then when I grew up, my mother would say things like, don't tell anybody. Don't let anybody know that. Right. And so I kind of let that stuff go. And I wanted to travel the world. I wanted to be an archaeologist. And my parents said, no, too dangerous. And because I was born in the 50s. So the world was different, right? We didn't have cell phones. It was much harder to get around. But in any case, so I decided eventually to go to law school and become a lawyer. And that's what I did for many, many years. And, you know, kind of bought into the whole dream with children and marriage and cars and a nice house and all those kind of things. And then I lost my 27-year-old son, Ben, to a heroin overdose. So he was kind of a financial guy and finding his way. And he's so funny, such a funny guy. And so my world just came crashing down. Nothing. I felt like I fell out of the matrix. Nothing made sense anymore. I didn't want to be there anymore. And so I could sense him, but I couldn't hear him. So I went to a medium. I never looked for a medium before in my life. I had no spiritual practice. I should probably say that. If you'd asked me before this happened, I would have said alive is alive and dead is dead. And that's all there is.
Well, you did have that amazing experience in the airport. Was that your first sort of mystical, crazy? Well, you grew up with the fairies and the invisible man in the basement, which is interesting because I just interviewed Kate Celesti, who's a 30-year animal communicator. And, when we're kids, a lot of this stuff is just normal. And the whole blocking out is a learned thing.
Right. Right.
So even though you had a very mainstream in the matrix life, right, there was this component of yours that was resurfacing.
Right, exactly. And I tapped into that later, you know, and so that's what started my journey. And I started taking classes, and I eventually met a evolutionary astrologer who told me my path was to be a mystic. And I'm like, what is that? What's a mystic? I had no idea. And so then I Googled it, and I ended up with the Four Winds and Alberto Biodo is one of my mentors. You know him. He's written many, many books. And so I became a practicing shaman, left my job, left everything, and traveled for 2.5 years around the world to try to comprehend grief and loss.
So I was so amazed. I mean, again, this character arc that you used to, that you lived, I mean, your life was so opposite of that for so long. I remember in your book, you described that you felt invisible in your household. And one time you went to dinner with your husband and you literally didn't say anything all night and he didn't notice. And then you dyed your hair from blonde to red and it took him 3 weeks to notice. And I mean, this life that you were living was so devoid of the awareness of these beautiful experiences that pop up. Anyway, expand on that a little bit more, because it's almost like your son's death gave you this amazing gift of a journey into...
Totally, yeah.
Into spirit.
The doorway. Death is a doorway. Illness can be a doorway. And things that open us up, crack us open. And that was a doorway for me. And I felt like it was his gift to me. And he's much happier on the other side. And I can, you know, I can sense his presence and communicate with him and work with him. And I'm fortunate in that way. And I know he's much happier on the other side. And this was a gift to me. It opened up a whole world that I would not have experienced. Many people where I am, judges until they're just about carried out feet first, right? Or they try to retire and then they come back and say, what do I do with myself? And I thought that too. Well, what would I do with myself if I retired?
Yeah. Can you describe that life? Because you do it so well in the book and it really just captures what it's like to kind of just be on the hamster wheel, living a dead life.
Exactly. That's why there's a word like living dead or dead on my feet. Dead. I mean, we know this kind of, we feel this where we're just trapped. But we can't feel how to get out of it, how to get unstuck. You know, we're trapped by family and our car payment and our mortgage payment and all the stuff we buy, and the stuff takes over, right?
Yeah, 3 decades. I mean, I can relate a little bit because I got sort of stuck on the hamster wheel, you know, in my medical practice. And hey, guys, studies are showing that 68% of people that watch podcasts regularly don't click the subscribe button. Do me a huge favor. If you like this content, click subscribe so other people know where to go for the cool stuff. Thank you. And there's so many people that benefit from just the wisdom of knowing that there's another avenue to take. And sometimes life forces it upon us. I mean, COVID was something that shifted my life a great deal. Your son's death obviously was a big shift for you. So what would you say to somebody that's like, I'm totally stuck in the hamster wheel. How do I get out?
Wow. Yeah. So many of my clients are coming from corporate America, from medicine, from all over. And try to get in touch with, what did you want when you were younger? What were your dreams? We've forgotten our dreams mostly. I can't think about that, because if we think about life out of the hamster wheel, what could happen? We might then go there. We might jump off the wheel. And then what would become of this? Homelessness and despair and poverty and no job. And so fear, we're kept in by fear. And plus we get all these rewards, right? So if you have money and position and status, you get rewards from society. So there's many pressures keeping us conforming and staying until something so dramatic forces us out and forces us to take a look around and say, what am I doing? How did I get here? And how do I get out?
I always say decisions are easy when there's no alternative.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you got to that point. And tell us about the incident in the airport, because that was tell us about that. Receiving the information that was like the worst thing that could ever happen to you, the death of your son, and then seeing him in the airport.
Yeah. So I was in South Korea. I had taken a vacation and I thought, you know, he was struggling. And I thought, when I get home, we're going to have this big conversation about where he's going, his life and stuff like that. So I went off. And so that day, that afternoon, I just felt sick. I just felt sick. And then I got this phone call. It came in and it was an unknown number. And I don't usually answer those. But for some reason, I called back and it was a detective wanting to know, you know, was I home? Where was I? And I said, South Korean. Why? About your son? What? Did he have an accident? Whatever. I'm sorry to tell you, he's deceased. Wow. Heroin overdose. And then trying to get back. Night is day is night, the time shift. I had to wait 12 hours, I think, to get a flight out the next morning. I was sitting there in the airport, and then just came right to me, right in front of me, just like he looked in person, live, with his big old smile, right? And then he kind of faded away. But I felt like, oh my gosh, he's alive. He's around. And I frantically called my ex-husband and said, you got to call the ME. You got to call her right now. I think he's alive. I think he's in the trying to get out. I think he's trying to get out. And so they humored me and looked and said, I'm sorry. But
yeah. And he was in the morgue at the time. And you had this vision.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they confirmed that he was actually not trying to get
out. And so that was the beginning of seeing, sensing, feeling him around me. And I think that was it. You know, he was trying to let me know because I was grieving so frantically. I mean, I would lay on the steps. I couldn't go upstairs. I would lay on the steps and scream and cry till I threw up, until I threw up blood. So
prior to that, had you ever had such a mystical experience? That profound?
No, not since childhood, where I danced with the fairies and had that lifetime. But no, nothing like that.
And it's so interesting that every time he came to you, he was pretty much good humored. I remember at one point in your book, you know, you were bugging him because it was his birthday and you were in horrible pain. And he came to you and said, Mom, stop it. You know, you're fine. This is a bummer.
This is the end of bummer. It's only a 27-year-old male can tell his mother. You know, I'm right here, you know. So in a sense, that was another door opening where I said, oh, my gosh, you know. He's happy where he is. What more could I want, really? Although I have him here, I mean, physically to hug him, to touch him, to whatever, but he's really happy, and he wasn't happy here. He really
is. Can you talk, because I mean, again, I know people who've lost unexpectedly kids, and it's just, you can't even imagine the grief. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's like 100.
Yeah.
What was it like to, I mean, how many years has it been since the passing of your son?
It has been now 8 years.
Yeah. 8 years. So it's still not that far in the past.
No, no.
How are you?
You know, I am one of those lucky ones that have been able to get through it. And writing the book helped me to move through it. And seeing it in a mystical way and being in touch with Ben helped me to move through it. Not that it's perfect. I mean, that parade of holidays that comes around and is very hard, right? And I think it's hard for a lot of people that are grieving. And so, but I just know that he's happier where he is.
Yeah. So if this friend I'm thinking of whose daughter, I mean, unexpectedly medical condition, just died right then, right there. And this was actually pre-COVID. So that was ultra, ultra unusual. What would you, and again, it's been several years, how would you work with that person?
So one of the things, well, you know, it depends how far along, how long it's been. The first year or so, I think you're just in shock.
Mm-hmm.
And after you get through the shock, then you start looking to, how can I create a new life out of the ashes of the old one? What can I do? How can I turn this around to something that honors my loved one, right? And sometimes we think, oh, if I don't show how I'm grieving all the time and sobbing and crying, my loved one on the other side is going to think I don't love them. They're going to think I'm not mourning them. And nothing could be further the truth. As we remain stuck in our grief, they remain stuck too.
So then, well, if we think about it, I mean, if I were to die, I certainly wouldn't want, you know, my mother would be horrified and devastated. And I mean, the last thing I would want for her is to feel pain. So don't we also have to remember that the person on the other side just wants you to be happy. They love you.
No, and they also have their work to do. So, you know, it's not eternal slumber. Mm-hmm. They have things that they do. They work with ascended masters, guides, angels, whatever your belief system is. But this is the way I experience it. So I'm just talking from my experience. And so they have lots of work that they do on the other side. And when we're keeping them, holding them close, that way they can't, they're not free either. So it's that looking at it in a slightly different way, challenging old paradigms and belief systems so that we can release them as we release ourselves in a beautiful way, in a way that honors them.
So if it's in the first year, it's kind of a little too fresh. What is the optimal amount of time for somebody to come to you and say, hey, I just want to process this stuff?
Oh, gosh, there's no specific time frame. I think it's when you know you're ready, when you kind of look up and you go, okay, I got to make sense of this. At first, you don't want to make sense of anything, right? I don't want to make sense of anything. I wanted to pretend it didn't happen. I just wanted to, right? So when I got to that point where I need to make sense of it, well, I went on a 2.5 year journey around the world. I sold everything. I sold my house, my car, everything. And I traveled all over the world talking to shamans and priests and spiritual leaders of all kinds to try to figure out grief, death. What do we do with this? How do we get through it? We never get over it.
Man.
We can get through it. And how can we do that?
How has the pain changed? Because, I mean, it must have been incredibly raw and immense and just kind of rendering one incapable of much of anything except just breathing. And then how would you describe how that's shifted and changed? I mean, your story is amazing, how you've, you know, stepped out of a 30-year career that everybody would give their left arm for, that was striving for that kind of thing, and just embarked on this amazing journey. The humility that went along with it, because one minute you're a federal judge and the next minute you're working as a barista in I believe it was Chile. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did the quality of the experience change over time?
So I was fortunate enough, as I was going on that my transformational journey of 2.5 years, to really think about writing a book. And this book that I wrote really has those experiences in there. And so there's many books that'll talk to people about you need to go on a date, or you need to go to a movie, or you do that. But a lot of people are like, I can't, I'm not there yet. So then it came to me, why can't we? Why are we stuck? And what is keeping us back? And so if you look at our journey, the journey of the bereaved, similar to the journey of our deceased loved ones, transformation, resurrection, rebirth, that's over and over again in many different cultures and many different religions. What if we're on that same journey? And if we look at it as a journey, then we get out of that paradigm. It's time to move on. It's time to get over. Here she is. She just can't seem to whatever, right? So we're on a journey. That's what I tell people. You're on a journey. And I use 16 practices, and they're practices that are very familiar to a lot of people: non-suffering, non-judgment, non-engagement. And using those practices and sitting in a ceremonial way, sitting with a candle lit, sitting in a place that's sacred, and sitting until you're talking to yourself, your deepest self, and writing down answers to questions like, who are you judging? Who's judging you? So then one of the answers, I was judging my son, right? Mm-hmm. Really judging him for doing that stupid thing.
Mm-hmm.
Went to a party, got drunk, and they decided they were going to try heroin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was laced with fentanyl, which is, I mean, he yeah, wasn't... So- as far as you know, didn't have a heroin problem. It was just something that he did one night.
And I think they gave him too much too, 'cause he's a big guy. He's 6'8", 275 pounds. Mm. And they gave him the whole bunch. But anyway, in any case, so going on that journey, what is the journey? And so sitting in a ceremonial way and writing it down on pieces of paper that you're going to burn in a flame. So in many cultures, we think about going into a temple or going into any kind of Catholic church, whatever, and lighting a candle, prayers for our loved ones. So that concept of lighting a candle and sending prayers heavenward, it's something we can tap into. And so sitting in a ceremonial way and writing things down like, who's judging you? Who are you judging? And releasing it. Right. So we can go deeply, deeply, deeply into our psyches. Suffering. How are you suffering? How are your thoughts making you suffering? A lot of it is shame, blame, guilt.
100%.
Right. I should have done. I could have done. I might have done. Why didn't I? Why didn't I make my loved one go to the doctor? Why didn't I? Why did I go on that vacation? Why did I guilt, shameless? So we get so wrapped up in those thoughts that we're creating suffering. And to actually see it and write it down and release it with the idea of opening your heart to different ways of perceiving it. Because the fact is, we don't have control. I didn't have control over my son. You don't have control over someone going to the doctor. We don't have control. So release that. And people begin to then release some of the heaviness that keeps them stuck in their grief.
Beautiful.
Beauty, right? I tell my clients, do one thing for yourself every day that brings you beauty. A sunrise, a sunset, chocolate, whatever it is, an art show, whatever it is, because as we are caregivers, parents, we lose that, right? We live for other people, or there's not enough time, or we're still very pressured. But as we begin to practice beauty, we're digging new neural networks. And if you do that for 30 days, practice something just for yourself, your life shifts. And so this is how I work with people. I help them to shift their perspective, shift their lives so that eventually they get to this rebirth place where they actually begin to create a new life out of the ashes of the old. So mine was writing about this experience and teaching and helping people who are grieving. Everybody has something else that they would do to honor their loved one.
Tell us a little bit about synchronicity, because you opened up to a whole different way of living, because you were, you know, living the federal corporate judge life and, I don't know about corporate, but the federal judge life and, you know, totally, you know, that get on the freeway and combat traffic for X amount of time. And you know, if you balance everything just perfectly, maybe you can cut 5 minutes off of the commute time and then spend 10 to 12 hours at the office and, you know, have your judge lingo with other judges. And, I mean, you did a great job of describing that whole thing. How much of a blessing is it to you in retrospect that you got out of that?
Oh, so much. Oh my gosh. When I actually was, that was one of the biggest things when I kind of, he passed and I was outside of the matrix looking around going, why am I doing this? I'm driving the second worst traffic in the country. Every day I'm working 12 hours. Everybody's like, oh, you have great skin. Well, that's because I went to work in the dark and I came home in the dark. I didn't see the sun and I only took a vacation occasionally, you know, so that lifestyle where we're actually, it's sort of honored. Oh, you have all those vacation days that you never used. Oh, how wonderful. Not wonderful. You know, it's not wonderful at all. And I think that's what we've got the millennials and young people are challenging all this. And it's like, why do I want to sit in a cubicle 12 hours a day and travel in horrible traffic? And for what? What is kind of life is this, right? So it's lifelessness, right? And what do? You go home and you go on and do some more shopping because, you know, get a little bit of a pair of hormones or whatever, a little stimulation.
A little dopamine release in your brain.
And first thing you know, you have stuff. And then that stuff doesn't satisfy. You need more stuff to get that dopamine release. So you have a whole house full of stuff. I mean, when I had to move out of my house for 30 years, I mean, it took a village.
And as George Carlin said, as you said in your book, what you own owns you. You don't own it. I realized that when I moved across the country that I when I moved here, I was like, I don't want to have a bunch of stuff. I want to be able to pick up and just leave to another country and never come back and not feel like I miss my stuff.
Right. You know, there's so much, and it has prana, it has energy, just leaving behind. In my book, I talk about leaving behind things that were passed out from my mother to her mother to her mother, and sitting with my daughter and saying, take what you want, instead of giving her a guilt trip. And there were all bad stories. Oh, this is from her husband fell in the river. He was a drunk, and this one did this, and this one was a woman. I'm like, why are we carrying this, you know, carrying all these horrible stories that women pass down to each other, that trauma? I mean, as women, we carry a lot of trauma, generational trauma, and just releasing her from that. And I always say, I ask her once, do you miss any of that stuff? Nope.
Beautiful.
Nope. And I don't either. And I don't, I'm free of it too.
And then you you actually went to do a Native American ceremony. And tell us about the incident with the deer. That was an amazing story. There's so many amazing stories, but you were just guided, and rather than fight it and stay on a hamster wheel that had no life for you, you went where life was taking you, which was so pretty.
Yeah, part of the shamanic journey is to go on a vision quest. And so I have a dear friend that is a pipe carrier with the Lakota tradition. And so I went through her doorway to do my vision quest with the Lakota. And so on the way, we're driving there, and a deer jumps in front of me and really crashes the car. I mean, the car is completely disabled. And so how am I going to get there? I'm going to be late. How are we going to get there? We go through all this. I had your supporters. You have two supporters with you that help support you with your vision quest journey. And so we had to like get a rental car and get this towed. And it was like a big deal. And it was in the back of my mind, what is this? What does this mean? And so I got there, and one of the elders was, deer medicine. And so the next day we go up in the hill, and we have our own little spot up high in the mountain where we stay alone.
And when that happened, you were like, oh, maybe this is a bad omen. I feel terrible. I've killed this deer, and oh, there was a baby involved. And, yeah. You know, we were worried about the baby, just as any loving mother would. And so you were like, did I take a wrong turn? Did I come to the wrong place? And then this elder came to you and gave you this piece of information.
The information. And the chief of this particular part of Lakota, Crow Dog, his medicine was deer medicine. So everything was kind of like, oh, so I went up the hill, and the very first night I'm there in the dark, and I hear rustle, 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 rustle. And I'm like, oh, what's that? And I look around and I see this dark form in the shape of a deer. And I'm like, uh-oh. Like, oh, I didn't mean to kill you. Oops, I'm sorry. But in the deer, I get this message from the deer is, this is not your path. This path of sacrifice is not your path. Your path is the way of the shaman. And so because I was sort of debating in my mind, will I go with the Lakota path, pipe carrier, all those traditions, or will I go over here to the shaman path with Alberto and in the jungle? And so that was my answer. And so I must have fallen asleep, and I woke up the next day, 50 to 100 feet down the mountain. Don't know how I got there, but the message was clear. This is not your path. And so I went down the mountain, and that was my question. And that was, you know, usually you have a quest for spirit. Show me, help me with this answer. And I was given very clear guidance to go the way of the shaman.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Karen, if you were to go back in time and spend 5 minutes with the 10-year-old version of Karen, what would you say to yourself?
Oh gosh, be you. Mm-hmm. Be you. Yeah. You know, it's okay to see things, and they're going to be part of your story. And maybe you don't tell everybody because not everybody understands, but can be your little secret. You can have a secret life. You just be you.
And what would you arm her in terms of pain and suffering coming up? What would you say to her about that?
Love, you know, just love. Love deep, love strong, love as much as you can. All the people that come your way, just love them. And even when they go, they don't really go, right? So people always say to me, well, you tell them, say that they come and visit you. So how is that if they're in heaven? How do they come and visit you? And I said, well, it's not prison over there, right? They're allowed to come back and forth. And they do, and they come visit us. That is different from a soul who is stuck in between realms and needs a little help. And that's another kind of work that I do.
I've been doing a bunch of interviews on near-death experiences, and it's fascinating that the actually, one of the upcoming interviews is on shared death experiences. And yes, there's like this beautiful team of people that meet you when you're ready to go. And even when somebody's dying, they're often a group or other people will experience that death experience with that loved one. It's it's reported less than near-death experiences, but it's also rather common. So it's comforting to know that people have walked this path, and like you're walking this path, and there's joy there. There's, you know, there's, hopefulness. There's, a reason to feel optimistic. Like when your son comes to you and says, "Hey mom, I'm doing all these great things," you know, stop being a bummer.
My doorbell here. Yeah. So it, and you know, what more could I hope for him as a mother? Doesn't mean I don't miss him. Doesn't mean I don't miss his physicality. Doesn't mean I dread that empty place that he holds for the holidays. But, you know, there's ways that, and I'm working on that. That's my second book, is working on how we can get through this.
Where does joy come in? Where do you experience joy in these journeys? Because you traveled to John of God, you've traveled all over the world. What is your experience of joy?
For me, the joy is this freedom. I'm not in the hamster wheel. I let go of those expectations, all those expectations that we don't even know that keep us stuck, that keep us like, I ought to, I should, I must. How are people going to look at me? What are they going to think? And blah, blah, blah. When you're free of that, life becomes free, and travel helps us. You know, there's something about, and I read a book but talking about travel and how it frees us from the gravity pull of the every day, the gravitational pull. And I thought, that is so true. When we get out of our box, when we leave, then we're free. And there is where joy is.
How do people, I mean, obviously you're a published author, and how do people most find their way to you? Is it through other people, or is it through interviews like this, or what? How do you find?
And I have a website, KarenJohnson.net, that people can find me. And I do classes on grieving too. I have a 5-week class coming up, and I teach, so I have students, and so I've been really. I could not have dreamed this. I had a dream, and that's why I always tell people, what do you really want, and how do you want to feel? What if you had joy and abundance and love and community and all of those things? You were doing something you really wanted and wanted. I said, I want to write a book and I want to teach. And, you know, people were saying, how are you going to do that? You just left a 30-year. What are you going to teach? What are you going to write about? Nobody gets published anymore. Nobody's not even accepting me. Blah, 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 blah. That's why you have to dream free. Dream free of money. Dream free of family. Dream free of education. Dream free. And that's where happiness lies.
So tell us about that book writing experience, because, you know, you weren't a book writer, certainly not on this subject. I mean, that was like complete 180 degrees. And you're right. I mean, people do say, oh, book publishing is impossible. You know, what was that like for you? How did it unfold?
Oh, gosh. So I kind of got downloaded all these experiences I was having. I was keeping a journal, and I really thought, oh, I'm just going to do a blog or something. People will like that. And the blog turned into so much more. And so what I did is I went to Hay House. Hay House has a workshop, a couple-day workshop for people. And if you go to the workshop and take their workshop, I think they do it online now, too, and not just in person, and then you have the opportunity to submit a manuscript to them, which they will not take from just anybody. You have to have an agent and all that kind of stuff. So I submitted the manuscript, and I won the grand prize. So I was the grand prize winner. Yeah. I kind of knew I was going to win. I just had this idea. It's all in this dream. It's all in the universe. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is the message I'm supposed to get out. And this is the form. And so it's not that I'm so great. It's just that it was meant to be. This is a piece of work that was meant to go out into the world.
Beautiful. You were stepping into who you actually are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so wonderful. You said you had another book coming up next?
Yeah, I'm writing a second book because there's always more, right? It's always about grief.
Oh, there's always another layer. I mean, this is the human experience.
Yep. So I'm just putting the finishing paragraphs on it. And And so I'm excited about that too.
And tell us about that. What's it called? Can we know, or is it a separate?
Yet? But it really has to do with things like surviving the holidays. How we do that? How we might challenge old belief systems that we have. Yeah. About how it's supposed to look, and using shamanic practices to help us and guide us and to make changes in our thinking, because the only thing we can really change is ourselves.
100%. It's all an inside job.
All an inside job. Yeah. And so many people are like, we're so worried. Oh, okay. Let's have a 5 minutes of silence. Okay. It almost feel like it. Oh, here we go. Here she goes again. Right. Well, how can we shift that dynamic a little bit?
Well, we don't realize that we're in the prison of our own makings.
Yeah.
Jill Bolte Taylor is going to be coming on the show. Are you familiar with her? She's the woman who had the stroke on the left hemisphere of her brain.
Yes. Yeah.
And she,
she's a physician.
She's a neuroanatomist. So God's got a sense of humor, right?
Yeah.
Right. So she loses the whole left hemisphere. And because she's a neuroanatomist, she knew what was happening to her. But she was in total bliss, total happiness, didn't know where she stopped and the rest of the world started. But what's interesting about that is it makes you realize, wow, this is just a portion of my brain that's doing a job and bringing me all this misery, which is the stories that we've created about something.
For sure.
And you talked about that in depth in your book. I mean, again, when a mom's lost a child, there you can't help. It's the way our culture is set up. We almost force that woman to go ad nauseum into depth over what she did wrong.
Right.
Can you speak to that? Because, that was so painful for you for so many years.
That's a shame, blame, guilt piece. And I could go clear back to the very first babysitter he ever had, or the very first, maybe it was the wrong diaper. Maybe it was the wrong, it could go all the way back. Every choice that I made, because as mothers, we make choices for our children, and they're small. So what choice how did I do it wrong? How could I have gotten it so wrong? And to let that be, right? And the beautiful thing about it is when we come to terms with that and we're real, other people can have an opportunity to be real too. So often we go, how are you? Great. How are your kids? Oh, wonderful. Everybody's perfect. But when we're broken and we're open and we're bleeding from things, that gives them the opportunity to say, I'm having trouble too. My kids aren't doing great. I'm not doing so great. And so instead of having this wall, right, that we put up around ourselves, this fake wall, we have an opportunity to turn this into truth and reality.
I read once that we're lovable not because we're perfect. We're lovable because of our imperfections.
Yeah.
And the thing that made that so clear to me is if you could imagine a person that, said all the right things, did all the right things, was the perfect athlete, was the perfect this, the perfect. I mean, how much could you have any kind of relationship with that person?
Right.
They'd just be a robot.
Right. Exactly.
So
we erased every single thing we did wrong, or we would disappear. So we're that some part of all of it, our shadows, the good, the bad, the positive. If we can come to terms with that, like Rumi says, and invite them all to dinner, that's where we come to accept ourselves. And when we accept ourselves, then we can accept other people.
Beautiful. So where do people go that might be suffering that want to get their first taste of what you're teaching, what you're offering? Where's the starting point?
So my book, of course, you can go to Amazon, Living Grieving by Karen Johnson, Using Energy Medicine to Alchemize Grief and Loss. Wow. So that's what we're doing. We're going through this alchemy process. And KarenJohnson.net is my website. You can look at the Four Winds website. You can see me. I teach shamanic the medicine wheel several times a year with other teachers too. And so, yeah, you can find me in a number of ways.
Beautiful. Are you on YouTube at all?
I have YouTube.
Okay.
I have YouTube, and I you'd have to look that. I'm not sure what that link is, but I have a YouTube link, and I have a lot of videos, I have a lot of video journeys, and I have all sorts of things on YouTube.
And the 5-week class, can you walk us through a little bit about what somebody would experience with that?
Sure. So the first week we talk about what is the structure? What are we going to do? And talk about that journey. transformation, resurrection, rebirth, and how we're going to go around the medicine wheel together. And so then their homework is to look at the exercises after the south direction. So we start in the south with the Indian medicine, and there's four practices there. And they're going to ask themselves all the questions to those four practices related to the, whatever they're grieving or their loss. Can be loss of a partner, loss of a business. You know, people experience profound losses of all kinds. And then we talk about it the next week. And then the next week, they do the work of the west direction. And then the next week, the north. And then the next week, the east. So we're in community instead of grieving alone, because we get very isolated in our grief. Right. So instead of being isolated, we're in a community, and you can hear people saying, oh, I did this, or I did that, or I thought about this. And somebody says, oh my gosh, I didn't think about that. I'm going to go back and do that too. I'm going to take that to the fire. I have this one too. So we begin to see that we're not alone. We're not different. We're not separate. We're not weird. We're suffering. We're grieving. It's a journey. And so this 5 weeks allows it to be that journey and to talk about things that are on our hearts as grievers, and to know that the journey continues.
Do you find, and it would seem, my hallucination is that people who undergo such an experience together end up being, I bet there's a lot of lifelong friendships that come from that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Because they've met at some place that's very, very real for both of them.
They go, it's only online, but it's amazing what happens online.
Oh, totally.
That's just amazing. You know, you think, oh, well, it's not the same as in person. No, it's not the same. But it has its own characteristics and its own. And so you meet people you would never meet, right? Because they're all over the world, or they're from here, or they're from there. You would never.
And sometimes you meet people in a breakout room, and the next thing you know, they're staying with you for a week doing an in-person event together. I mean, I've met people that way, and they've become dear, dear, dear friends. So I'm super grateful for the ability to work with people all over the planet.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So that's everything has the blessing and the curse. So that's the blessing. And, you know, there's the downside too, the yin and the yang. I mean, that's what I've come to realize. It's the yin and the yang of light. There's light in the dark, dark in the light. If you can kind of grasp that, then nothing gets you completely off track, because balanced.
Absolutely. Wonderful. You mentioned Rumi. I'm a huge Rumi fan too. So
I love Rumi.
And you mentioned Joe Dispenza in your book too. And I've done a lot of his work. And I do find that it's a lot of learning to fire and wire new neural pathways and allowing old ones that don't serve you to dry up and blow away.
Yeah.
That's why he named his book Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself.
I love that one. I just love it. Isn't that true?
Yes.
And to see how neurologically and chemically drama hijacks us, you know, so it's not like it's totally our fault. So if we reduce the stress, reduce the drama, then we don't have those chemicals firing in our brain. I thought that was fascinating.
And you had talked
to Greg Breeden is my favorite too.
I love him too. I actually had the privilege of interviewing him several years ago when I was doing my radio show in Anaheim. You talked about how just realizing that other people have the struggles too, and how that brings some degree of solace. There's that wonderful story, that wisdom story about a woman who's lost her child, and she goes to the local guru, and the guru says, okay, well, I just need you to, we can totally take care of this, but I need you to go out and get, you know, a quarter cup of salt and a third of a cup of something else from a household that there is no suffering. And so she goes out to get this, and, you know, I need these ingredients, and, you know, oh gosh, I'm sorry, we can't give them to you because, you know, we lost our husband the last year, and yeah, they got the next one. And then so after, you know, 10 houses, she comes back to the guru and she says, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah. No, we all suffer. And our culture doesn't help us through this process, because we see things like marriage and parenthood as positive. We know it's transformational, and we see it as positive. Oh, this is great. This is great. Grief, loss, we want to avoid that. It's also transformation. If you can hook into the wisdom of grief and loss, and the energy of it has tremendous energy to help you shift and change. And that's something that we just aren't taught.
Yeah, it's there's that's so interesting, because I recently interviewed a fellow named Dr. Ming Wang, who escaped the Cultural Revolution, and what he lived through was incredible, incredibly horrible. And most of us could not even imagine going through. In fact, Universal just released a movie on his life called Sight. But he does say in the movie, because at one of his worst points of suffering, he was able to have a realization that he's a renowned eye surgeon that allows him to restore sight to children who otherwise would have no ability to see. So, you know, even though it was horrible going through at the time, he realizes, wow, there's a real gift in that. And I think that's part of your wisdom and your teachings as well, isn't it?
It's, you know, it's always looking at the gift and the wisdom. If you can go back with radical gratitude to all the places in your life, this person did me wrong, this person did me wrong, that bad thing happened. If you can look at all of it and say, huh, thank you. Even if you're saying, thank you, you jerk, for showing me how not to be. Wow, it is profound. If you can go through your life story that way and shift it over, turn it over. This isn't forgiveness. Forgiveness means you're a victim. You did me wrong, but I forgive you. How about gratitude? Thank you. Wow, but for you doing that, I might have ended up like you.
Mm. Wow.
Take your power back, right?
Beautiful. Karen, it's such a delight to speak to you. I thank you so much. Your book was phenomenal. You know, just seeing somebody move through that kind of grief of losing a son and going to teach others how to live through grief. Your fabulous journey all over the world where spirit and synchronicity guided you, and how you went from such a intensely revered career and realizing that was not your path, and choosing something that was so fully aligned with your heart and your spirit. Such an inspiring story.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. I'm going to spend some time with you.
Yeah. Well, everybody, if you enjoyed this and got value from it, please click subscribe and go check out Karen's material. Thank you so much, Karen.
Hey, thank you too.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Next Level Healing. Please like, subscribe, and let us know how this helped you. How can it be even more life-changing? We love hearing from you. And if you're eager to upgrade your life, click the button here or go to consulttara.com and get your free customized GPS map. Get the coordinates for where you are now and where you want to go. Clients consistently report it's faster and easier than they thought possible. Remember, you were meant for more, and it is available to you. See you right here next week for our next episode.